Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night. It's the week, the Christmas Eve week.
It is? Okay.
Well, it's 1 week before the eve of Christmas.
Definitely.
So it must have a name, right?
Right.
I mean, if we're marketing,
it's the week before Christmas.
It's the week before Christmas Eve, actually. So, anyway, because that's so very important to Ivan and maybe
certainly
others.
Sure.
He's been practicing all his life.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas. The question has come up from very, very, very erudite scholars asking, posing the philosophic question, whether we should have a meeting tomorrow, next week or not. Right?
Wednesday evening. Christmas
Wednesday
Eve.
Evening for all you Judeo-Christians. Actually, on Christians, it's a day, it's a holy day. Now, I don't think you need to go to church if you're Catholic, but then again, I don't know. I know that there used to be midnight mass.
Yeah, midnight mass until there was too much intoxication, and they generally postponed it.
So, I know I myself will probably be having an adult beverage that evening.
David, I think our group will also be doing that, watching a work movie that one of our members is going to bring and play for us.
Okay. So does that mean that you will not be here?
Well, yes, essentially.
So he's saying, yes, I won't be
here.
Yeah, that's the same as the guy that said, yes, there are no bananas tonight.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe at a nod, some other gathering.
Ivan's,
like singing Hanukkah songs.
Oh, Ivan doesn't even mention things like that. This is Christmas.
Christmas? Oh, sorry.
That's the marketing line. I will be wool gathering most likely that night. Gathering wool, and who knows. And then the following week is actually New Year's Eve, and I know that all you party animals will not be here.
Well, that would be more likely for me because it's only an hour out of the party. I mean, that's not so difficult.
Why, it's barely noticed, right?
Yeah, I mean.
So the question is, are all you delinquent capitalists going to be here or not? I mean, how are you going to support the society if you don't go out and buy, give presents, ride on airplanes, eat turkey?
Well, I thought I would be taking up a collection, David, to give to the Institute while we were having adult beverages.
Well, that's a good thing. Actually, let the adult beverages take their effect before you make your request. Actually, it's the unpredictability of it that is the fun part. Dan, what are the masses saying to us?
So far we have three masses responding. Melissa says, I'll be here. Rocky says, I won't be here.
Oh.
Auntie Matter says, we'll not be here on Christmas Eve.
We were holding Christmas Eve specially for her. I mean, the whole thing was organized around her, but forget it.
I don't think she's Catholic, David. That won't work.
Not Catholic? The whole grief, the guilt thing doesn't.
Guilt, yeah. I don't think that'll work on.
Eve.
Yeah, well, that's what they teach you. They taught you, anyway.
There's a Christmas Adam and a Christmas Eve, is that it?
Auntie Matter says, who needs math when you have energy?
Oh.
Oh, wow.
David's outlook. That's fairly
she's
close to
his outlook. Becoming a physicist.
I think it's great.
As she's aging. So, Ivan, what are we doing tonight, anyway?
Besides talking about Christmas.
Just rambling, actually.
We could sing a few carols.
Well, let's pretend.
It's just September 30.
We are
actually no, Marvette. You haven't been keeping up with your classwork. 37,
which is one of the prime chambers, if I'm not mistaken.
You mean because it's a prime chamber?
Yes.
David, it's interesting. It happens to be the same chamber that we're on for Susan.
Yeah, that's what David was telling me.
Well, then you should be able to give us some good guidance on this one, Harry. Because,
I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know about, but well, anyway, I read this thing, and I've been, so here we are, Susan has arrived at the 37th chamber, right?
Right.
And what is she then, what do we then address, Harry?
Well, I think she's long gone for quite a while. I think I have her brother and her husband maybe there. Someone else has showed up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's my perception.
Antimatter, what was it, 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago? We had a class, and I had a powerful feeling of connection with her, which changed a few days after that. It was two or 3 weeks ago. So that would have been probably in the 20s, in the early 20s, in terms of chambers. But things are going okay for her. Wherever she is, it seems to be fluid. There seems to be a fluidity in where she is, and her designation as to rebirth, I think, was well strategized. She put a lot of time into it. She really did. And one of the ways she put time into it was reflecting on her own life. And this is what we can do, is just record, in a sense. I'm not a big fan of the you know, the journaling processes and things like that,
mm-hmm.
though they do seem, but it's more autobiographical. But autobiographical, looking at it from the point of view of the awakened essential self, looking back and in a sense saying, hey, what happened? What are the points that showed up? And when you look back in that way, you don't look at it necessarily historically in a linear way. You look at it at the points of awakened behavior,
mm-hmm.
and awakened presentations. That's what your life is all about. Those are the points you wound up in. 27 years ago, 25 years, 24 years ago, Susan Kester showed up at this school. She physically moved to Grass Valley. Do you remember her, Arvin?
Yes.
She moved here with her brother, and she ran the Plant Man for a while. Do you remember the Plant Man?
Yeah.
We had a nursery. And she learned bonsai, and that became a very important thing for her. She took that. She moved to Nevada City, and she began that business and actually did quite well as a bonsai artist. And then 5-6 years ago, she calls up and speaks with Jewel, and she says, oh, what's going on? And she recalled the work that Claude and I did years before, the Bardo Boot Camp. Remember when we did that? And in the Bardo Boot Camp, something clicked in. And then when she came back, she did extensive work with Harry, with Silverdale, myself, and a few others, on just reflecting on her life as a voyager.
Mm-hmm.
So now she comes forth into the 37th chamber comes around, and we don't know what's going on, if it's her or someone else, or there's some entity. But what would the voyager find on, let's say, entering the 37th chamber, then? What does the author tell us? Go ahead.
Can you read it?
Just read the first sentence.
These are the five methods for closing the womb door.
Now, so the voyager's been through a number of chambers now where this concept of the womb door has been suggested over and over and over and over again, right?
Yes.
And I'm going to read very, very, very brief sentences from The Luminous Emptiness by Francesca Fremantle, where she delineates the five methods of closing the womb door.
Is that the translation of the Bardo Tagal, or it's another book?
She did a translation with Trungpa in the 70s,
right.
And then she enhanced it with this enormous volume called Luminous Emptiness,
okay.
Where she spent a number of years retranslating it and completing the translation, because with Trungpa, I don't think she had done the whole thing. But she has extensive commentary.
Okay.
And so she says the first instruction is imagine the couple, and we'll recall this from a few chambers previously. Imagine the couple, because you've encountered the couple in copulation or something like that. Imagine them as the embodiment of the guru in male and female form, instead of an ordinary man and woman driven by lust. We see our guru immersed in samadhi of supreme bliss and with his or her spiritual consort. So then that's the first method. You notice that you're drawn into this and you flip into this other method. Second, we should meditate on the couple as our chosen deity, or as Avalokiteshvara.
Avalokiteshvara.
In union with his consort.
Yeah.
So this is my deity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Male, female, and body, it's an inseparable union of appearance and emptiness. We make mental offerings to them. And then third, we turn away from passion and aggression by contemplating the dreadful consequences of entering under their influence of passion and aggression, which we saw a couple of chambers ago. As the voyager penetrates the union of the two essences, it experiences a moment of bliss, and then it loses consciousness. So if it enters into that union, there's this moment of bliss, but then consciousness is lost, and the next life begins, and it enters into one of the six lower dimensions at that time. So you're fourth. This technique is to meditate on the unreality of all our experiences. All phenomena is illusion.
Yeah.
Right? Same thing.
35th chamber.
No, they're all like dreams, like magic, like echoes, like castles in the air, mirage. And finally, the final meditation is a meditation on the luminosity and emptiness, the simplest of all things. Everything that exists in my own mind, and this mind is emptiness, unborn, unobstructed. Meditate like this again and again and again until the womb door is closed. So we've been presented with five methods of closing the womb door in the American Book of the Dead in the last few chambers. And the author then says, these are the methods. What's the next sentence?
In the macro dimensions, my consciousness has the ability to hear and understand anything that is said in this teaching, whether it comes from one dimension or from another.
When I think about that, I get chills in a certain way, because what he said is like a flight of consciousness. The consciousness is in abeyance. Don't forget, at this point, the voyager is not in body.
Mm-hmm.
The body is not there, so there's a different modality is occurring. And the first phrase again?
In the macro dimensions.
In the macro dimensions, and my
consciousness.
So we're there in the macro dimensions, and it's the consciousness that is in abeyance, in a sense. And then listen to the next phrase that he talks about. Go ahead.
My consciousness has the ability.
This hold. Has the ability. So note that. So first of all, the first part of the sentence tells us we are in the macro dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, my consciousness has the ability to
hear and understand.
Now, I think I know both of you on the phone, and I know Ivan for certain, and the others that are here, know that when you are in a higher, I know it's strange to say, but in a higher essential self moment, a higher invocation, there is a different form of knowledge there. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not only knowledge, it's understanding, and it's not an emotional understanding, but it's a felt sense perceived understanding of clarity.
There's a different form of clarity that you suddenly have access to if you can acknowledge that you're in the macro dimensions. Your consciousness can then access that. And interestingly enough, it does not have an emotional tinge to it. It may have a form of a higher passion, energy, but it's the clarity that gives it its power. This great clarity of mind. And that's what yields the power that it has. Interesting, huh? How are we doing over there? We okay? Go ahead.
Regarding Susan, Antimatter says, we mentioned at the Orb Run gathering that it felt like Susan was helping us.
Thank you. Okay, so, and then continue, Ivan.
Consciousness has the ability to hear and understand anything that is said in this teaching.
So there you have, there's a very delicate and play, you're very vulnerable too. You're very vulnerable at that moment because your consciousness is able to hear. And I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago that Rocky mentioned this idea of navigating with mood. And that's where we are at the moment. We have to be very careful here. We can hear. Because this teaching, how do I know if I'm going to recognize the teaching, Ivan?
Goes on to say here also, all the perceptions and sensations are complete and intact, even if they had been impaired during my lifetime in the human dimension.
So we have a clarity suddenly is there, because certain things have dropped away. The body has dropped away, Then he says, and thirdly, because when in the macro dimensions of the labyrinth, I am usually overcome by fear most of the time. Let's look at that. Roll that out a little bit. And notice the fear moments in your life when fear occurs and you react with fear. You react with a kind of a fear, and in your fear you do something. And I think that the issue that's occurring there is there's a lack of capacity, in a sense, to absorb the energy of the macro dimension at that time, that the Voyager, and by Voyager, I mean us in our everyday life. And when we are mostly in fear when we're in those macro dimensions, what's going on? Why does fear occur during that time? Mostly we're in fear. When you notice fear in your life, sometime today you had fear. Sometime today you had fear. You may not have had a panic, but you had fear. You know, we spend a lot of time with what was the book? Don't Panic.
The Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah.
To the Galaxy.
Yeah. What's his name?
Douglas Adams.
Douglas Adams. That's what it's saying.
Yeah,
Hitchhiker's Guide is just don't panic. Because you don't know what's going to happen or why it's happening, and you observe. If you can drop into the place that George is talking about, that Silverdale is talking about, is this point of clarity, and just watch how it unfolds around you.
I would just like to offer that for me, maybe this is personal, it seems to me that the fear is a vestige of the human life, the human dimension, because it's as you're saying, I pop in and out of fear every day.
Yeah.
There's something that I'm fearful about. It's a reflex response to all kinds of situations in ordinary life. And for me, it's especially a reflex, like a buffer, like a protector, you know, from actually expanding the awareness of going into that other vibrational zone.
Do we get
that? Like, as soon, you know, I have the tendency, as soon as this change in vibration starts happening, things are going, this something here is going away, or my surroundings are going to disappear, or I'm going to be swept away, or whatever, and that's the fear that there's that barrier, like a buffer.
The fear serves as a buffer.
It's the fear of the unknown, or it's the fear of the other. It's the fear of what's not routine. What's not familiar, right? It's not familiar.
I was driving over here.
The unknown.
I live in town, and I was driving out to the land here. And it was about 5:40, and it was unusually dark because, you know, we have a lot of cloud cover right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's winter, and it's the short days.
Yeah.
But it was really dark. So I'm driving down Highway 20, and there was a particular curve of the road that I didn't recognize it.
Yeah.
Where the way that the road curved and my lights were hitting it, there wasn't anybody else right there, and I started getting nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I actually started thinking I was on the wrong road.
Yeah, that's a very good example of a situation where fear arises. It is not actually justifiable. It's not very rational.
It wasn't rational at all.
No, I mean, for me, yeah, I see in the headlights, am I on the right road? What road is this?
And so
that's,
my reaction to that fear at that moment was, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm not on the right road. Maybe I'm on another road.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm on another road. What if I am on another road? I don't know what will happen.
In fact, didn't you change chambers then, David?
Absolutely did I change chambers, because I wasn't being driven by the road.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't being driven by the common mechanical perception of the road, but by another element that was perceiving in a different way. So two things happen at fear. It's an indication, it's like a flag coming out saying something's happening,
mm-hmm.
You should be afraid. But it's also like saying something's happening, there's an opportunity here. If you are a macro dimensional being, you are going to look for those things.
Well, it could be, the other interpretation could be, it is afraid, now I know something's happening.
That's correct. That's
great.
Yeah, so that's how we have to, these are the Remember the end of the very last chamber, my habits will carry me through.
Mm-hmm.
Which habits? Which habits are you going to bring to the ball game?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I was treated at that time to that reaction to that fear. And it was quite
David, crazy. Isn't all of our fear, excuse my voice, isn't all of our fear a fear of non-existence? So it's kind of strange to think that non-existence exists. It's a contradiction in terms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're afraid of the void, but we're afraid of our human existence being temporal and not available to us forever and ever and ever and ever, and thus we get frightened. But if we can use those fright points as leverage points, maybe something
just watch.
Different.
Yeah.
Just watch. That's right, Harry. Just watch.
Mm-hmm.
No sudden moves.
Make no sudden moves.
Right.
And Tamara's not here, but she'll, somewhere in the Bible, she's
on there. Isn't
she's
she?
A Bible person too.
She's on
the list. Oh, she is. That's mm-hmm. right. That's right. And, it's like, watch always.
Always be vigilant.
Be vigilant always. Because I think there's a line, watch always. And that just always hit me. That hit me so powerfully. When I first read, I was 30 or 40 years ago, really, into the Bible. What a lovely thing. Watch always. Phone.
the scene in the Garden of Gethsemane when he asks the disciples to stay up, and I think he says watch with him in one of the Gospels. And later he goes to find them and they're all asleep. Antimatter says, and pray unceasingly.
Pray unceasingly.
Thessalonians.
Philokalia.
Yeah, well.
Okay, so I'm going to go back a little bit because there were some comments. So Rocky says, have fear in D2 when I get lost and am alone with the monsters. Same as the bardo, I believe. Also same in dreams. And less fear when you're with your POG. And then Simon Templar, because of the machine's habits, reactivity, plus vulnerability, are projections and being hijacked by the winds of karma regarding fear.
Being hijacked? Who said that?
Simon Templar.
That's a nice
great. Great.
Hijacked by the winds
hijacked
of
by the
karma.
Winds of karma. Very nice.
And Silverdale says, fear of our insignificance and nullity in the vastness of the totality of the clear light of which we are a part. And Gephalt says, what really caught my attention the other night is that here we are over 30 days after passing, and the instructions are still, if not more, crucial than ever.
Yes.
Well, yeah, they are crucial. I mean, it's the thirdly, in this paragraph that David was reading, to complete the paragraph, and thirdly, because when in the macro dimensions of the labyrinth, I am usually overcome by fear most of the time, I therefore will be willing to listen to suggestions about getting out of that situation. So, to me it suggests if I am still aware, if I'm still on this voyage in the 37th chamber, I'm probably experiencing a lot of fear or have been in and out of fear. And now, how do I get out of that? How do I get away from this situation?
The way you get away from this situation is to work with it in this lifetime. You practice the teachings now. Mm-hmm. You practice the teachings now, because when your consciousness is in the flight of consciousness, it can be recaptured from being hijacked by the winds of karma by developing the habits now of appropriate reactions to fear. So next time you have fear, when you have fear tomorrow, a little later in the day or tonight, harvest that and say, oh, why was I so afraid? Because I dropped the spoon on the floor. Why did that cause such a fear?
Yeah, really.
And just so then the fear becomes a marker because of the last part of that sentence is important. Let's look at that last part of the sentence again real quick. Go ahead.
I therefore will be willing to listen to suggestions about getting out of that situation.
So we are in fear, we are vulnerable, because we are so delicate at that time. We're so delicate. And so I'm going to listen to anything. Mm-hmm. My discernment, hopefully, if I'm still in as a voyager at this time, as most people are, your discernment might be pretty low. And the biggest thing that's happening is fear, and I want to get out of it. Right? I'm in fear. I just want to get out of the fear. I don't care what it takes, what the consequences are, or as Francesca Fremantle says, she says, turn away from passion or aggression by contemplating on the dreadful consequences of entering under their influence.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that would need to be an act of will, I think, that practice. Because the fear, to me, the fear that's being referred to here is it's the eternity syndrome. It's the fear of merging, actually, and being eternal.
Read what Silverdale wrote again, please. Exactly right.
Fear of our insignificance and nullity in the vastness of the totality of the clear light.
Yes.
Of which we are a part.
We are a part. Yeah.
We are a part, and our individual egos are our universe. And we look forward and say, "Oh, that's my universe."
And it's very paradoxical, because while on the one hand we work to develop our strength as a voyager, that is the clear light within ourselves, somehow there's a individual piece of identity which somehow remains, which is attempting to direct all of this. And so the paradox is we're afraid of the vastness, that we're going to be overwhelmed by the vastness of the clear light, and we suddenly realize we're actually a part of it all.
Yeah, it's only an ego. The I, the small I, or an ego, is going to be overwhelmed.
Yep.
Silverdale, Joel, isn't that what Gurdjieff was referring to when he said the sins of the body and the soul in purgatory?
I think you're right, Harry. That's a good point.
I mean,
you remember,
the individuality stains us.
That's right. We actually end up getting coded with inharmonious vibrations through our life experience, and what we are attempting to do is harmonize ourselves back with a clear light, so we have a clear perception of our essential self, which is in fact surrounded by the illusion or the materiality of a creation.
Right.
So it is a purgatory. There's a purging process.
Right.
Or there can be a purgation.
There can be. And we can practice that now. Silverdale, you recall me speaking about Jodi's guru, Beloved.
Yep. The Beloved, yeah.
And I don't think you, I'm not sure if you ever met him or not, but he, I was speaking to him, and he was a diligent meditator, and he worked very, very difficult. And he had gone into these deep dimensions, and he said once in the deepest meditation, his guru came to him and said, now you have to give up yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to give up yourself. And, of course, it was very hard for him to do that. And only when he did that did he come into his power.
Mm-hmm. Now you have to give up yourself.
He gave up his self.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that. Some people say that at that point, it's taken from you. It's taken from you.
David, the 35th chapter, I mean the 35th chamber, actually said it very elegantly, that whole chamber, what E.J. wrote. There's no teaching, and there's nothing there at all. It's mm-hmm. all projections. It's all, we make the sticks with which we are beaten.
Right.
It's a luminous. It's all the luminous void.
That's
clear
the luminosity that she's talking about.
That's the only thing that's real.
That's yeah. right.
Yeah. Is Gnostic Man there tonight?
I haven't seen him.
I don't think so. I'm not there.
Okay. I was just going to mention that. Actually, antimatter could speak to this. The in this poetry gathering last Friday. Gnostic Man gave us an exercise, which I thought was terrific. You know, which he said was to not meditate, but to just go into stillness and silence, to relax and take a deep breath, sit back. We took the time to do this exercise, like as a group. To go into stillness and silence, and he said, okay, when you come out of that, then just write whatever, you write down, record, what comes to you out of this stillness and silence. And it struck me, I noticed that when in doing that exercise, that I had a moment of fear.
Yeah.
That it's like, actually, if you blank your awareness, if you actually can surrender, think into stillness and silence, and then coming out of it and saying, okay, now I'm going to go into language, I'm going to actually take up this instrument and write down something, there's like, to me, this fear of like, oh, it's everything, what am I going to write? What is going to come? I was afraid about what I would come up with, what would come
right.
out of this,
right.
because it was completely white. It was like a white space. Anyway.
Well, it's this fear of individual insignificance.
Well, I'm just thinking that that's I realize may not be the same for everybody, but for me that is a terrific exercise because it's sort of like, you write, you come out of the stillness of silence. Are you going to write like a stitch in time saves nine? I don't think so.
Unless, unless you penetrated during that moment
yeah.
what it actually means.
Yeah, right.
Which you, so, it actually means something.
But it's sort of like, for me, it was like out of the whole stillness, out of the whole blank field of stillness and silence, now what am I going to do about that? What am I going to cover? What am I going to communicate? So
one of the things about this first part of this chamber is that there's a discernment that is very important. Because the Voyager is in the macro dimensions and is able to hear the teachings, right?
Mm-hmm.
But is also subject to, because of the fear, is subject to whatever it hears.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what he's going on to talk about.
Yes.
Consciousness. So,
we have to develop the sense of discernment as we move through the bardos each day. As your work gets more refined, you will be in the bardos much of the time. You will recognize that that's what's going around you all the time. You or a Bardo Voyager. And when you have these moments of fear, those are clear and distinct. And then you need to be careful about what instruction you take. Because the world will be giving you instructions as well. Okay? Now, so let's go ahead to the next part. Yeah, please.
Okay. Second paragraph. As consciousness has no roots or anchor points in the macro dimensions, it naturally is attracted to any area of attention to which it is directed and repelled just as naturally from anything which it's told to resist. Just as a tree which on land was impossible to move even with a bulldozer, when in water can be moved with one finger, so am I in the water of the labyrinthine macro dimensions, and therefore my presence is fluid and extremely easy to guide even the smallest effort.
So discernment, discernment, discernment. Because with one finger we can be moved in this water. And so how, once again, how do you develop discernment? You know you have it. Everybody that has had a profession of some sort has developed discernment. Like, I'm just thinking of, like when you do graphics, a graphic artist develops incredible discernment about color and tone and paper and every other thing you can imagine. That they have a discernment that I know I don't have. I mean, I can, in gross terms, I can tell this is better than that. But when I meet with these graphics people, they go, oh, this one's much better than this one. And I'm just blankly scared, staring at it. And I go, yeah. Because they have developed, they put time in grade to develop that sense of discernment. Like Ivan may not be able to tell us exactly right at first, but when he reads some dialogue, he'll say, oh, that was pretty good writing. Or he'll say, that's kind of clunky. Because he's got many years of discernment
right.
In terms of the written word. So we've all been, we know we can do it. Now we're just being asked to develop it in a different manner. Right? Discernment. Okay, where are we now?
Therefore, it's important to direct my consciousness as a voyager on every stage of the voyage in the labyrinth. Not just one or two, in order to make certain that I'll attain liberation, if not at one stage, then at another. That's the reason so many confrontations and instructions are given to me during the experience of the labyrinth and the confrontation with the clear light is given so many times in so many forms and variations.
How do you like that? I thought that was just a mind boggler, that last, you know, it's like, hey, wake up, you know, and we've been giving you this instruction over and 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 over again. You want it in a different form? Okay, here it is. Yet again in a different form. So we've been given the instruction of harmonizing, as Silverdale's talking, harmonizing with the clear light.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the fortunate ability in our daily life, because we're so clunky, that we have the ability to learn the new techniques all day long. I mean, it's going to be, like, I know exactly what I'm going to do externally tomorrow. I'm going to get up and I have to drive for 2 hours. I'm going to have 6 hours, 7 hour meeting. Then I'm going to, all kinds of things. And what I'm excited about is what is the macro dimensional tone going to be. I will be in several very unusual spots. And I'm looking forward to that.
Antimatter said, probably regarding Gnostic Man's exercise, yes, good exercise, and what emerged from participants was powerful. And Pianjo says, thanks for your comments. Oh, I'm sorry, that's directed at somebody. And Ginger Rogers says, we are going into the 37th chamber for Susan. Timing.
Perfect timing. Yeah, I noticed that when I read that. Carmen's posting early in the day. So I think this is the only time, in a sense, that we've coordinated together.
With the readings?
Yeah. The readings, mm-hmm. I think they go at 4:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in the ashram, and there's a group of individuals. Carmen is there, Pani is there. I think I've seen Ginger Rogers there and others. Maybe Mr. Sierra comes sometimes for that. Very, very powerful reader. And they read the chamber in round robin. You know, they read each person.
A line or?
I can't remember. But it's very potent because then they're beginning to read as one voice,
mm-hmm.
which forces you to do exactly what Ivan is saying, is that you enter the stillness and silence, and you are no longer, as Silverdale is telling us, this individuality, you're just part of this thing doing the reading.
Mm-hmm. So like one voice.
It's a one voice, yeah. And you try to do this.
Yeah, I had an image. I had this vision. I don't know if it's why it would be this chamber in particular, but it struck me that there's the way that the awareness or the consciousness of the Voyager is being spoken of. It suggests to me that there's, let's say, it is not in the body. It's out of body. It's out of ordinary
life.
It's out
of body.
And this could be, let's say, I could be working with this walking down the street or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's still not temporal, not an ordinary time, space, let's say.
Absolutely not.
So I had this image of the resonance of the chamber 37 is a kind of what George describes as a vibrational signature. It's a location, let's say, or a chamber. That's so anyone, anywhere, anytime who's reading chamber 37 would be doing it all together. Would be doing it.
Wow.
Partaking of that space, let's say. So, you could think of it as traveling between eternal chambers. You could be easing yourself out of those spaces and have, from a certain viewpoint, it would be the perspective you would have is of all of the occasions on which you had read that chamber or all the occasions it was read for you, or perhaps all the occasions that anybody had read it anywhere. they could all be considered as the same thing.
Interesting. Wow.
So,
David, it's very interesting that Richard Moss wrote a book entitled The I That Is We. And I think that summarizes the experience that we have.
Yeah.
We work together.
Could you say that again? You
the I that is we. That's the
okay.
That's
the I. I got that with something else he said there. I didn't get it.
The I that is we.
Yeah.
Excuse my voice.
Yeah, I'm just, obviously I'm very, very interested in taking these experiences on the road. What's it like when we're out there? What's it like when we're using these techniques in our day-to-day life? And I know for me, I'm very excited about tomorrow now, because
mm-hmm.
I've got all these little keys sitting there waiting for me to take off with, you know? Cool. Were anything else at the moment? How are we doing? Yeah. Well, here's something that Ivan, go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
It's a little bit unrelated, but I read ahead on in our book. Okay. I cheated a little bit.
All right.
And I noticed that there are 49 chambers, and that's it. It's over at that point. So it made me think that we're going to come to the end of this book at some point. And so it made me think, what should we do next, if anything? I haven't posed that question to Pat. I was hoping to pose it to her, because whatever we do, I'd like it to be something that we can do with her. And she may select one of the other of the many offerings in the death and dying cycle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Lazy Man's Guide, there are a number of others that are... So some of them are pretty dark in a certain way. Yeah, the early limited editions it'll be something that you have or you can get a hold of.
Well, it could be The Great Adventure.
The Great Adventure is out there.
A set of talks.
Life in the Labyrinth.
You know, that angel's healing journey goes through all these chambers up through 49, but just in a completely different setting, so to speak. So it'd
right.
be an interesting point of contrast if we did that.
I had that in mind, Silverdale. We did Life in
we
the
did
Labyrinth.
We did Life in the Labyrinth, but we could do
bigger. We can do it again because... We as a group have matured yet again, but I'm thinking very closely about something like Angel's Healing Journey too. I can't hear you.
No, that's right on the phone.
I was thinking that we could do a cycle where after a book devoted to the bardos, you then bring it back into the body and do the HBM, followed with something like Life in the Labyrinth, followed by another round of the bardos.
Well, we're...
It's an interesting idea.
Very interesting idea. I mean, it's been a little while since we've done HBM, which is... I pulled it out 3 weeks ago because of something that was going on. But anyway, let's just say that that's something that's up for us to consider, is that we may want to do another book or we may want to This may be the last Wednesday that we ever do anything. Who knows? We may be, what do they say when you get transported up? Ascended. You know what I mean.
Yes.
The rapture. The rapture may hit us.
Yeah.
And if the rapture hits some of you, I think, I don't think I'm going to be pulled up in the rapture.
Well, yeah. Is this the right holiday? I don't know.
It's just the rapture.
For Jewish people, the rapture would be around Passover, much more likely.
Okay. No, they actually have been reading. They've studied, the scholars. Anyway, so just keep all of this in mind, and whatever, several of you may not be here next week, and if that's the case, I wish you a safe journey in whatever you're doing at that time. But I think we're going to be here anyway. I will be here. Pat, I'm not sure Pat will be here, and probably Kathleen Dreyer might even be here. She might want to come to this.
Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Put her up on stage.
Yeah, up on stage. And does other stuff happen on Christmas Eve? I mean, are there events?
We have a day of
that's
music.
That's 2-3 days after.
Yeah, we usually do a day of music on the 27th, right?
Yeah. That's David, different than
will you have a mystery guest?
Pardon?
A mystery guest?
Yes, we are going to have a mystery guest. And their name actually is Mystery. I don't know what kind of event you're talking about, but all I know is that we were forbidden from opening presents on Christmas Eve. We had, my Aunt Julia always told us we had to open them on the Christmas Day. And then she would pass out the presents. And oddly enough, many of the presents were for her. And she'd be like, oh, here's one to Julia from Puffy. That was her cat. And then she'd be, oh, here's another, here's one from Tommy.
Very nice.
How nice. And that was her Christmas. And I was very small and had to go along with it. But anyway, next Wednesday we will continue this night, 7 o'clock, ABD, next chamber.
All right. Thank you, David. Ivan.
Thank you so much. Take care of that voice, mister.
Oh, yes. I'll take care of it.
Thanks, David and Ivan.
Good night.
Good night, Silverdale. Good night, Harry.
Good night, George.
Good night, Harry.